All right, it's time for a weekly visit with the Massachusetts State Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr. And Senator Tarr, in the middle of this heat wave, welcome back to MSO. How are you today?
Well, thanks, Rick. I'm doing great, and I hope you are as well. And I know that I'm in a cool place, and I hope you are. And these days, that's something that you can't take for granted.
Well, we live on Cape Ann. My studio is on Cape Ann, and you are correct. It's just a beautiful place. Don't take it for granted. Although I we didn't talk about this in our pregame warm-up, but I do have to mention the beach situation in Gloucester. Gloucester, as you know and our listeners know, switched over to a new system for parking at the beaches this summer, and it's worked very, very well up until this week. And apparently there was a glitch, and Saturday, being a hot day tomorrow as we record this on Friday, Saturday, July 23, sort of like the airlines, they've overbooked by 300 spaces. But to Mayor Verger's credit and to others in the city, they've got a workaround around that. So it's good to know that you can get past having to rely on other people's computer glitches.
Well, it's true, Rick. And if there was a worse time than this particular weekend to have a glitch with the beach parking system, I don't know when it would be.
Right.
But it's a testament to the resourcefulness of Mayor Verger and his administration that they were able to find a way to deal with it. And that way to deal with it wasn't only providing refunds. They're certainly offering those, but they're also accommodating people that had purchased a pass that is in excess of the capacity of the parking lot. They're going to set up remote parking and a shuttle so that anybody that has one of those passes that they bought won't be deprived of being able to use the beach, because I'm betting that there are an awful lot of people for whom the refund wouldn't be quite satisfactory if they had to stay at home on a 90-degree day.
Oh, agreed. And the other thing, the other compliment, I think, to the city is the fact that for local residents, the traffic situation has been much, much better this summer. So good job all the way around. Senator, let's get to the State House now. The budget, it's complete.
It is, Rick, and it's a little bit late. As we've talked about in the past, the goal is to have it in place for July 1st, which is the beginning of the new fiscal year. We are now in the new fiscal year, and so fortunately we had passed an interim budget. And this is something that I think is significant, and it sometimes doesn't get enough attention, is that in Massachusetts we don't talk about having shutdowns of state government the way that we hear about it oftentimes in the federal government. We passed an interim budget. Everyone agreed to that so that we'd know that we would have time to finish the details of the main budget. We call it the General Appropriations Act. And we would not have any interruptions in government. And there was never a question about that. So we didn't see an interruption. We did see the conference committee come to a final agreement on the budget. One significant thing about that budget document, Rick, is that it is about $2.7 billion more in spending than the budget that had been approved in the Senate. And it was also higher than the budget that had been approved in the House. And the reason for that is because revenues continue to come in at a greater rate than we've expected. And so the conference committee had to adjust for that, had to adjust for increased revenue. And that's why the spending document wound up having a higher total than was what was in either the House or the Senate. But it's a good document. It increases local aid. It doubles the minimum per pupil allocation for Chapter 70 for educational aid. It increases the amount of reimbursement for regional school transportation. And one thing, Rick, that I think we may have talked about in the past, it sets up a $6 million grant program to help our local school districts deal with mental health and social-emotional learning issues. And those issues have been something that have been on the rise even before the pandemic, but certainly during the pandemic. They've become even more pronounced. So this budget makes a lot of good investments, and I'm very pleased that we're able to get it to the governor's desk. And, of course, now the ball is in his court, and we'll see. He's got 10 days, and we'll see what he does in terms of vetoes or recommended changes.
I'd love to see my budget come in with increases without my knowing. That's good. But yeah, especially the mental health bill, Senator, that's given the pandemic and how what we've seen with how kids have responded and so on across the nation, really, a very timely, positive effort.
It is. And again, this is something that folks in our school systems have been talking to us about. And we actually had a very good conversation that was convened by the Cape Ann Chamber of Commerce through its Business Education Collaborative. And Representative Belcito and I were able to participate in that and talk with people in our school systems who really made a compelling case for why we need to do more. And I'm pleased that we've begun to do more. I think that this program is just the beginning, but it certainly is a step in the right direction, and it's breaking the ice for giving more assistance to our school systems who deal with so much on a daily basis, but certainly have to deal with these issues, and they deserve our support.
Terrific. A couple of other bills, Senator, you want to talk about, a climate bill and economic development?
Yes. So very significantly, the Conference Committee on the Climate Bill, which is a committee that I actually appointed myself to because I feel so strongly about it. Oftentimes I appoint other members. That Conference Committee reached agreement, and we accepted the Conference Committee report yesterday. And this is something that responds to the urgency of the times that we're in. And, Rick, you don't have to do anything more than walk outside right now to understand why we have to respond to a changing climate. And so this bill sets the stage for more production of alternative energy, such as wind-generated energy, solar-generated energy. It also looks at something that's been a very serious issue for me, and that is the ability to transmit and distribute that energy, because there are a lot of things that we've done thus far that create a lot more demand and prospective demand for electricity, trying to electrify transportation with our bus fleet and our passenger vehicles that we all drive. Trying to do that, that is going to create increased demand for electricity, and we have to do something to make sure that we can supply that energy from renewable sources and deliver it. And our grid right now needs a lot of help. It's fairly antiquated. It needs to be modernized. And this bill will begin to chart a course for how we do that without overwhelming ratepayers with the cost of the upgrades that are going to need to be made.
All right. And with respect to economic development?
So I'm thrilled that we debated and finished last night. I think it was sometime between 11 p.m. and midnight. We finished debate on an economic development bill that's very significant. It includes about $2.9 million in spending of our surplus money and some money that we got from the federal government, and about $1.4 billion in capital authorization, so borrowed money. And this bill is intended to do exactly what the title would imply. It's entitled to catalyze economic development in Massachusetts. In a whole host of ways, it looks at creating more affordable housing. It looks at grants for important infrastructure upgrades that will then support the construction of buildings where employers can be housed and create economic opportunity. But, Rick, by far, in my opinion, the most significant thing in this bill is that finally we see some significant tax relief for the taxpayers of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And you know that this is something that I have been advocating for the last several months. It's something that Governor Baker first proposed all the way back in January. And we have had to be very persistent about this, offering amendments at every opportunity in a number of different bills. And finally, we have been able to reach agreement with the leadership of the majority party in the House and the Senate to be able to get a significant tax relief package. One that includes increasing the rental deduction for folks that rent their homes, increasing the dependent care deduction for folks with children or others that depend on them that need care, increasing a number of other different things, including the senior circuit breaker, which is something that allows our seniors to be able to get some relief for the property taxes and utilities that they pay. So there is a wide array of things in this bill that help people across the spectrum, and I'm really pleased that after months and months and months of trying to advocate for this and trying to push it forward, that we finally reached agreement in a very bipartisan way to get those tax relief measures onto the governor's desk.
Well, as a senior, I'm appreciative of that, Senator. Thank you very much.
You know, Rick, I had you in mind the whole time.
I'm sure you did. All right, listen, a couple of other items here as we move along. I got to ask you about the Orange Line, for use of a better word, fiasco that happened this week. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. And some of the passengers on board, when that train got stuck on the bridge on fire, actually jumped out. Well, one did anyway, jumped out of a window into the water. You know, that's on a lot of people's mind. And my daughter is looking forward to commuting from the South Shore to Boston, where she works on public transportation. So what's your reaction to all of this, Senator?
Well, I think we've got to step up our efforts to increase the safety situation at the MBTA. And, you know, Rick, this latest incident is one of several that have happened over the past several months. We had one back in January in another community in our Senate district in Wilmington, where we had an individual lose her life because the gates didn't come down at a grade crossing, and she proceeded through it and was struck, fatally struck by a train.
Oh, my.
So, Rick, you know, the MBTA is a major factor in our lives in terms of providing transportation, in terms of keeping cars off the streets, in terms of reducing our carbon emissions. And it has many roles and many priorities, but there's no doubt that the number one priority needs to be safety. And we know that the federal government had most recently issued a report about things the MBTA needs to do. And we had debated and passed recently a transportation bond bill that included at least $300 million to go to the MBTA to help do some safety improvements and safety upgrades. But in that bill, I also worked with Senator Brendan Crighton from RIN, and he had an amendment on safety. I had an amendment on safety. We worked together in a bipartisan way, and we put one amendment together. The component that I contributed was to require the MBTA to hire an outside third party to annually do safety audits and make recommendations. His part of the amendment was to increase reporting so that when something goes wrong, we know about it and we know what's being done to remediate it. So safety is not only on the minds of the folks at the MBTA in terms of what they need to do to improve it, it's also very much on the minds of the legislature. And the two things that I just mentioned passed unanimously.
Okay.
And so it's a situation where we have to do better. That being said, I will say when we've had some safety incidents in our region, the MBTA has been incredibly responsive. They collaborate with us. They try to get to a situation where we either determine that nothing else needs to be done or we identify a remedy that needs to be put into place. But that being said, we need to do better, and we need to do a lot better. And part of that is resources, but part of it is management, and we need to continue to work through the situation to make sure that it's managed properly. And in fact, Rick, there are some folks in the legislature who have recently suggested that maybe the MBTA itself should be dissolved and we start in a different way. And I think it's maybe a little bit premature to suggest that at this point. But that indicates to you the level of frustration that folks have.
Senator,
this transit agency, again, that's so important, has been plagued with so many problems.
A quick question. How much of this is dependent on management? How much of it is dependent on infrastructure?
Well, it's hard to assign percentages, but I think it's a combination of both. And when it comes to management, I think one of the things that we need to do is shift away from a model of reaction to a model of proaction. I think we need to get more out there ahead of the situation and understand what we can do to improve. And again, I say that knowing that this is a system that's very old and for many years without the investment that it needed. And Governor Baker has tried to accelerate that investment. I was actually the author of the legislation that created the Fiscal Management and Control Board, which was the conduit by which a lot of that was accomplished. So I think that there have been some advances, but it would be hard to say that you can't address safety issues without management, and I think there needs to be more of a focus on that at the MBTA. But at the same time, we need the resources, and one of the things that we're seeing are advances in the infrastructure that we have for things like positive train control, which is being installed all across the system so that if something goes wrong in an individual train, whoever's at the dispatch center can control that and take advantage of being able to remedy the situation when it can't be remedied at the train level. So there are things happening.
Okay.
But unfortunately, when we see things like what most recently happened, A, they're very dramatic. B, they can be life-threatening. And C, they tend to attract a lot of attention, as they should. But we need to move past sort of the drama factor, and we need to get back to the ground and say, how can we change this? What can we do to get ahead of it? more than what's being right now.
Okay.
There's no way that's going to happen without additional resources and stronger management and oversight.
Well, I thank you for that, because it's so easy to point figures from the outside without knowing what's going on. So that's good. Finally, Senator, on a brighter note here, I want you to mention your relationship with the KPAN cable 1623, I guess it's called KPAN Today, on 1623 Studios, because you have a program with Heather Atwood, who is well known to our listeners and viewers and visitors here at MSO News Sports, and you talk with Heather very frequently. And tell me a little bit about the relationship and your information that gets out there on local cable.
Well, I want to say, first of all, Rick, that having local news resources like MSO and like 1623 is absolutely critical. And we can never, ever overstate the importance of the connectedness that 1623 Studios provides to us and you provide to us. It's essential. Certainly newspapers are important and the print media is important, but they don't allow us to have the kind of conversation that you and I are having right now. Both have their role. But certainly 1623 Studios is a great resource for KPAN. It gives us the opportunity to see what's happening in the community. If we may not be able to get to an event or a meeting of a school committee or a city council or a select board. And so it provides us with connectedness in that way. But it also gives us the opportunity to go a little deeper and talk about subjects, again, just like we are right now, about what's really happening on Beacon Hill or what's happening in the fishing industry or what's happening on the clam flats, and all manner of things. And so 1623 does have a show called KPAN Today. It often features Corey Kukuru and Heather Atwood, but most often when I do it, it's with Heather Atwood, and most often we tape it on a Friday afternoon. And so that actually just happened prior to the discussion we're having now. And I can't tell you how valuable I think that is. And, of course, Heather's a remarkable personality on 1623. She brings a great perspective. She brings a lot of enthusiasm. She brings a lot of focus. And most of all, she brings commitment to the community. And so I can't say enough about how fantastic I think that 1623 Studios are and the focus that they have on local things. And KPAN Today is a great way for us to see what's happening locally when we can't necessarily be in touch with everything. But again, I'd be very quick to say that MSO does that for us as well. And these are two extremely valuable parts of our lives in terms of the media.
Well, you're very kind. Excuse me. And it's great to do it. And it's great to know that Heather is doing that as well. And Senator, as we wrap this thing up here, there was something going on with some relief for the lobster industry that maybe we can talk about in the future.
I'd love to talk about it, Rick, maybe when we have a little bit more time. But that was actually an amendment that I had secured in the state budget. To create a $500,000 loan program for lobster fishers to be able to replace the gear that they have so that they can get new gear that's being required to protect the right whale in the situation where an entanglement might occur. Happy to talk about that more in the future, but it's a really significant step, and it's important for an industry that in many ways is really carrying the burden, the overwhelming burden, of protecting the endangered right whale species.
That's Massachusetts State Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.